You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
So welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405, where we help businesses thrive. And we often talk to people who are involved in success, sometimes struggling. Sometimes we're talking to advisors who have insights to help people, companies thrive. Sometimes we're talking to thought leaders from around the world. And today we have a wonderful experience ahead of us because we have a thought leader who is committed to helping small to medium-sized businesses thrive and who is also an advisor and has some tools to share with companies. I want to introduce Peter Vicens. Peter, welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405.
Thank you so much. Nice to be with you today.
Now, Peter, you've served as a high-level corporate advisor since 1983, and you began with projects to assist Fortune 100 companies to get really clear about what their finances are, about how to move forward, how to forecast. And what I find really fascinating is you are in the process of helping smaller companies, closely held companies, startups, and capital formation companies to do exactly the same thing that Fortune 100 companies have been able to do for a long time, right?
Yeah. When I was, in my 30s, and I was being asked to help larger corporations, a lot of technology corporations in those days, because of all the transitions that were going on. Obviously, for publicly traded companies, the objective was to build valuation. And the way you build valuation is you have to show growth. You have to show how you're doing capital reinvestment. You have to show how you manage risk. And the objective, obviously, is to build profitability. I think all companies fundamentally want financial stability, increased revenue, increased profit, increased valuation. Some need money, so there's capital formation. Essentially, irrespective of whether it's a large business or a small business, the largest asset of the business owners is the company itself. And we want to retire with dignity because it's not what you make that counts, it's what you keep that counts. So what I found in doing this, there are a lot of disciplines involved in making a company succeed. What is your sales strategy? What is your client experience? Do you meet customers in your own facilities? Do you meet them on their facilities? How do you dress? IBM had a dress code back in those days. How do you create customer awareness? How do you make your company the top of mind if there's a need, a pain, an itch, an urge, whatever was going on? How do you do that? How do you create efficiency? How do you manage human resources? How do you adopt emerging technologies? There are a lot of things that went into trying to help businesses prosper. Do they have a plan? Do they know where they're going? Do they know how to make the plan effective? Otherwise you won't like where you wind up. But of all the things that I was fortunate enough, and I worked with a couple of companies that were good to great and built to last, so these weren't just loser multinationals, what I found the weakest discipline always was fiscal management of the company. And in the 90s, I got a little tired of helping the big companies, so I shifted to small and mid-sized companies. And it was a lot of fun. I was helping companies grow, thrive, triple profitability, just all kinds of really neat things. And I learned things from the big companies that were applicable in the small, and I learned things in the small companies that were very applicable in the large. So here I am trying to figure out what I'm going to do when I finally grow up.
Well, that's wonderful. Some of the things you're talking about are precisely the things that at Gonzalez CPA that we're working in the advisory program there. We're introducing companies to the entrepreneurial operating system. And in addition to getting a clear vision, getting the right people in the right place, the third thing is data. And that's where what you're talking about, getting really crystal clear about not only where we want to go, but where we are right now and where we are every day along the path. That's where I really see that you guys are really helpful.
Let me move into this whole concept of fiscal management. You know, if especially with smaller, mid-sized companies, whether you're a startup, whether you're second or third generation, whether you acquired the company, whatever it is, there had to be certain things working in order for the business to make it through the first 3, 4, 5 years. And especially with the tough economic times that the country has been in the last decade. So there are certain things that you know the business is doing well on. The challenge is the principal of the company has certain things that they create value for the business in, whether it's their sales ability or their customer relationship or their innovation or their invent. There's many things that they do to create value. But there are very, very, very few business owners that I have ever met that understand how to manage the capital of the money, of the business, of how to use that capital for moving the business forward. They just don't get it. Now, this wasn't exclusive to small and mid-sized businesses. I was privileged to meet and work with CFOs and multinationals, and I had fingers left over if I was counting who I felt hit, you know, what really needed to happen in those worlds. So the question becomes, what is this whole concept of fiscal management? Well, things happen every day in a business, and almost every one of them can be reflected in the accounting system. Whether you're invoicing somebody and you get paid or you don't get paid, or how your expenses are, or if you're going to plan growth, you want to add an office in Sacramento, are you going to lease it? Are you going to buy it? When do you hire? What are the sales? All these, there's just a lot of elements that go into fiscal management. And unfortunately, for most business owners, fiscal management to them means, is there money in the checkbook?
Right, right.
You know, there's a lot more to fiscal management than just, I'm not saying cash is bad. Cash is very, very good.
Right.
But there's not a lot of fiscal management involved. And the biggest problem is capturing the data, capturing the financial information in a timely fashion. That is singularly the biggest problem. Let me explain what I mean. A lot of people with their smaller businesses, particularly in the United States, they use QuickBooks. In the United Kingdom, they use Sage products. In Australia, they use MYOB. Everybody has their favorite desktop accounting package. Now, there are a lot of problems with those things. The first is the data is not easily accessible because when you build a software product, the key thing is what kind of a scheme do you build into the core database? Because essentially, what is it that an accounting system is doing? It's collecting information on transactions. It's giving a value to them. And it's trying to generate reports for them. So the tools that were available 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago for capturing data and being able to put it out in an effective way by today's standards are very clumsy. If you think of a large corporation where they have enterprise systems, ERPs, right? The reason people like Oracle and SAP can charge multi-millions a year for managing those data systems is they used an architecture for the data. It's called system query language. This goes back about 40 years, and it's very clumsy. Unless you knew exactly what you wanted to do and exactly how you wanted to pull out the data, you add anything, you modify anything, compliance laws change, massive amount of extra work for the programmers. Great for Oracle. Not so good for the corporation. So, particularly with products like QuickBooks Desktop, that was built to create kind of a simple, fast-to-market, let's get it out there, let's make it simple for micro-businesses, really small businesses. And so they built a data schema that it's maybe one step above a spreadsheet when you're talking about data retrieval. And the problem began when they began to get popular and a lot of people were using them. And the reason they were using them is if you bought a PC back in the day, it came along with a complimentary copy of QuickBooks, right?
Remember that? Yeah. Remember.
You know, so I didn't pay for it. Okay, we're going to use QuickBooks. And then at the end of the year, you take it to your accountant, and the accountant says, well, I need your company data. And you say, yeah, it's in QuickBooks. So QuickBooks becomes the standard accounting system in the United States, essentially because Microsoft helped them give away 3 million copies with new sales of PCs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the product was not designed for doing things like having multiple profit centers. It wasn't designed for even simple things like payroll or the ability to track aging or to figure out what true cash flow looked like. It just wasn't built to do that. It was a simple little package for doing accounting in a micro business. But there were so many people that were using it that Intuit, the makers of QuickBooks, knew they had to try and add features. So they kept adding features, and they kept adding features, and the features were just, they're kludgy. It's not a stable, not a fully robust product, but people were used to using it. So what happened was a lot of third-party developers, young people in the Valley, people at MIT, they began creating little applications to try and help broaden what QuickBooks does. And some of them are pretty good, and some of them are, well, they're there. What's the problem with all of this? Most accounting systems have to post the entire period before you can generate the reports. And it's not just posting the period, but it's reconciling the account. So for those of you who are listening who don't understand what posting is, it means every time you put something transactional, money transactional, into your company, you have to put it into the accounting system. So you post it. So a lot of small businesses, well, maybe they post once a month. Oh, I'll just get ahead of this, right? The end of the month. Or maybe they post once a week. Maybe they post the money that's owed to them every day. But maybe they post the money that they owe every 2 weeks. You cannot get any kind of an accurate financial report unless the whole period, in this case the month, everything is posted, and you make sure that it reconciles. And what reconciles means is that the statement from the bank matches the entry and the expenditure. So what you wrote on the checks, what you got paid by the checks, all the money in and out matches what's in the bank statements. That's what reconciling is. Okay. Now, let's think about this a minute. Okay. We're going to do this at the end of the month. So it's the 30th. I've posted all my stuff, but I got to wait for the bank statement to get back. Now it's the 15th of the next month. The bank statement gets back. I'm still entering other data, but I'm able to at least look at what was happening 6 weeks ago. How do I fix something that went wrong 6 weeks ago? Okay. I don't know a way of doing it. So the challenge with products like QuickBooks, it isn't that they don't do accounting to standards that are, you know, generally accepted accounting principles. They do, but the problem is it's nothing more than a place for packaging your tax needs for your accountant at the end of the year in order to reconcile the business's taxes. And hopefully look at your personal taxes and figure out how, what's going on. So, it's what are the two things that are eternal? Death and taxes, right? So we know we have to do this. But in terms of providing any kind of information that's of any value in real time, it's impossible. If I know that something I'm doing is making a mistake, or I find out that the reports I'm looking at are in accrual. What accrual means is when something posts, it counts it as if it actually happened. So my question to your business owners is, every time you bill somebody, do they pay it the moment they get it? Every time you get a bill, do you pay it the minute it hits the inbox? What if you're a little slim on cash? How long do you delay? How many of you choose to pay the extra 1% a month to defer the outgoing of this? Accrual reporting basically says, as soon as I put it in the accounting system, as soon as it's in QuickBooks, It's as if it's real. So explain to me how I can look at a profit and loss statement that's an accrual and have any idea what's going on in the business. You can't. So what emerged, and this actually is not like it emerged a year ago. The first products that started to do this go back to 2000, 2001, was people began to design cloud-based accounting systems. And the thing that is unique about cloud-based accounting systems is that when you put the data in, it goes into the cloud. Just like if you have a Dropbox or a way of chatting with somebody through your cell phone, okay? Goes right into the cloud, and the data is available in real time right away. Now, this is kind of fun, because now if I want to check on the status of something, I can see it as it's actually happening. I can look at it in accrual, or I can look at it in cash. Let me give another simple example. Business owners don't understand fiscal management or accounting language. All right, but they have to use the bookkeeping. So now they're using very antiquated systems like QuickBooks Desktop for managing their accounting, and they get a report. Who explains the report to them? How many times do you think a business owner talks to their accountant in the course of a year? Three times? Four times? Who knows, right? It's certainly not like they're chatting twice a month to figure out what's going on financially with the company. So the business owner prints out a profit and loss statement. Then they look at the profit and loss statement. They don't realize it's an accrual. And they come to a conclusion that the profit and loss statement is telling me whether I'm making money or not. You're not. Profit and loss statements do not tell you whether you're making money or not. They are not a cash flow statement. And if they're in accrual, you don't know anything because you don't know how much you haven't collected or what you have or haven't paid. And you might think you have money in the checkbook, but you don't know what you've accrued in taxes. Business owners do not understand accounting vocabulary. And so all of a sudden you found out what? The profit and loss statement does not tell me whether I'm making money or not. A lot of businesses need help from a bank, right? Since the bank blow up. Banks would require that you have what's called, in the United States, it's called a balance sheet forecast, a three-year balance sheet forecast. That sounds pretty impressive. How many business owners know what a balance sheet is? It's our liabilities and our assets, and my eyes get blurry. Okay. Their accountant tells them, your taxes are pretty complex. You own the company. Your wife works. You've got some real estate property that you lease out because you're trying to, build some equity on your personal statements. I don't think we should pay you from the company on the payroll. What are we going to do? I still need the money. Not a big deal. The company will loan you money. And then we'll reconcile that as a tax statement at the end of the year. Business owner goes, wow, that sounds like a good idea. I'll still have to pay the taxes, but I'm not on the payroll, and that's why I hire my accountant. He's going to make this efficient for me from a tax standpoint. Here's what the business owner doesn't understand. That the money that's paid to them on a loan from the company does not appear on the P&L statement. So when they're looking at what they think their balance is, what they're paid isn't even there. Where is it? It's in the balance sheet. Well, you think, okay, it's an expenditure, so it must show, a liability. No. Because it's a loan from the business, on the business balance sheet, it's an asset. Somebody owes the company money. It's an asset. So there's a cash expenditure, which is going out to the business owner, that shows up as an asset on the balance sheet. How many business owners understand? The accountant understands it. He's going to reconcile the taxes at the end of the year. All right? So kind of the challenge is that things that you need to be able to do, business owners first don't understand. Secondly, their accountants don't understand that they should have a fiduciary responsibility to train their business owners about. And that's what I, you know, love about the firm you guys are working with, the Gonzalez, because they're trying to educate the business owner on fiscal management of the company. But more importantly, if you needed some working capital, three-way balance sheet forecast, what's that? Okay, here's what it means. You have to do a three-year projection that accounts for what your budgetary needs are over 3 years, what your revenue projections are over 3 years, what expenditures of cash only appear in the balance sheet, what expenditures in cash only appear in the P&L statement. And to do that over a three-year basis, the bank is only going to loan you money if it believes you can afford to pay that based on key performance indicators that the bank says are required when you turn in a three-way cash flow. How many business owners know what a key performance indicator is? They have no idea. Now, think of this. Business owners, when they're going to build a budget, how do they build a budget? Well, let's see. What did we spend on marketing last year? Okay, divide that by 12. We put some mean average in. What did we spend on payroll? Okay, well, we're going to hire 3 more people, blah, blah, blah. And so they tend to build a budget based on all the line items that appear in a chart of accounts. The chart of accounts is what the accounting system uses for tracking every transaction. So they build a mean average, and they plop that in, and that's a budget, and now we're going to push that budget out 3 years. Did they account for seasonality? Did they account for variance? Did they account for growth? How about the revenue side? The revenue side was a forecast. Did you account for aging receivables? Do you even know what your history of aging receivables are? How many business owners do you think are capable of doing, Boolean algebra algorithms using, you know, artificial intelligence methods to actually build a cash flow forecast? So this is why when businesses go to the bank and say, I need money, the bank looks at you and seems like the only people who can get money are the ones who don't need it. And that's because the business has no clue on how to build a three-way cash flow. Let's, again, this is a regulatory requirement of the banks. The banks and the government insist that you do this. That's why it doesn't happen. The Profitsy tools, we actually do this because using cloud-based accounting software, we input the data in real time into the tool. We look at every single transaction over a three-year history. We look at its aging, and we use AI tools to build not only the budget forecast, but the cash flow forecast and the actual receivables and payables for it. You have any idea how many transactions are in 3 years of history in even a $1 million business? Mm. There are hundreds of thousands. Okay. Mm. So the point is that business owners don't understand the vocabulary and the meaning of accounting words, and they certainly don't understand fiscal management. If I did a three-way forecast on a business and it showed it's fine for 17 months, but in 18 months it's up 120,000, you might think, well, okay, we're doing $1 million a year, maybe we can. No, that's showing real liquidity. You don't have access to other amounts of money. And to look at you having a 12% upside down in 15 or 17 months, the bank isn't going to just hand you $120,000 and you think you're going to solve this with a three-year note paying 2% above prime. You're in trouble. So what are you going to do? How do you build a strategy? How do you make the strategy cash flow? How do you see what the cost of doing business buildup is, and when does it start a rate of return? So this is why using desktop bookkeeping like QuickBooks is an absolute ticket to disaster. It just, you cannot know what's going on in the company.
So what I hear from you is that it's not necessarily the product, it's that it's locked into the desktop. And what I didn't hear, but let me ask you, is when we move to the cloud for QuickBooks or MYOB or any of the other good products, but we're on the cloud now, then we can now include bank feeds, right?
Yes. Yeah. You can include bank feeds. The data is live and accessible to anyone who has authority for using Xero or QuickBooks Online or Sage One. I'm not a fan of Sage One. Mm-hmm. But there are products out there that do these types of things. And the thing that makes them so incredible is whether it's the bank transactions, the actual data feeds from what's in the systems, and access to really incredible third-party tools to build efficiency into your company become right there for you. Right. There's a product called Receipt Bank. Okay. Mm-hmm. What Receipt Bank does, and it works with QuickBooks Online, it works with Xero, it works with a number of accounting systems, cloud-based accounting systems. You just take any expenses you have, you scan them, you feed the scan into this application, and it actually enters the data into the accounting software.
Wow.
No typing. That's a pretty cool tool.
Pretty cool. Now, we'll take a break here, Peter. Can you stick around, and we'll talk a little bit more about how the tools that you have will help businesses and thrive, and what kind of strategies people can begin using to predict and forecast what's going on with
it. Absolutely. Be happy
All
to.
Right. Thank you very much. All right. So I'll take care of this in post-production.
Sure.
Is this what you want to do? Going all right for you?
You're my sample audience. You have to tell me whether I've lost you.
You're doing fine. No, you're doing fine. I think when we pick up, we'll have another 20 minutes, and then let's focus on specifically what small businesses should be doing. I mean, one is they should be getting into an online system, period.
Absolutely, yeah.
And talk about the difficulties that companies who have embedded themselves into a desktop system, how they get out of it.
Right.
And then let's then talk about how people can use ProfitC to get clear about how to move forward.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Guide me, Obi-Wan. Just tell me where you want us to go.
All righty. All right. So welcome back to Pilgrim on the 405, where we've been having a fabulous, very interesting conversation with Pete Vincennes. And what Peter's been doing is he's created a suite of cloud-based software that provides the same thing that Fortune 100 level financial analysts use, and he provides these tools to CPAs and other consultative service organizations to help them help their clients thrive. So we're going to spend a little time talking about how do companies make this move from a desktop accounting system like QuickBooks Desktop to systems like Xero and MYOB and QuickBooks Online. How do we get that out of the desktop onto online efficiently and effectively? And then how do we use this wonderful tool called ProfitC to achieve what we're doing at Gonzalez CPA with the advisory team there, which is to help each of the advisory, the companies in the advisory program at least double their revenue in the next 12, 18 to 24 months. So, Peter, welcome back, and tell us about this movement from how do we move from desktop to online?
Again, I think the key thing here is you need to understand you really have to move off of desktop accounting systems. This isn't it'd be nice, but you have to make the shift. The reason is a simple one. Real-time data is what allows companies to get stronger in building revenue, profitability, financial stability, valuation of the company. Real-time data does that. Secondly, the basic tools that people have been using for years are about to be sunsetted. Even QuickBooks understands that QuickBooks Desktop has to be sunsetted, has to be no longer supported. Our business is 9 years old now. We started out working with QuickBooks Desktop. Very, very difficult. We just walked away from it 4 years ago. We had to tell all of our users, no, you have to move to cloud and so on. So the big question is, how do you make this migration? Well, the first thing is the cloud software providers are really smart. Okay. So Xero's pretty smart. QuickBooks Online, pretty smart. They have built the tools for capturing the data from other desktop accounting systems and importing them into their cloud-based systems. So the first thing I would do is I would work with someone who is accredited or part of those other ecosystems, whether it's QuickBooks Online or whether it's Xero or whoever it might be. I wouldn't move to MYOB quite yet. Their architecture isn't going to really hit full tier until October of this year. It's more an Australian-based business, but nice stuff, but they're still in migration. So what do? You work with someone, you get the software tools. They're probably available from Xero or from QuickBooks Online, and you run the accounting systems in parallel. You run your desktop and your cloud-based systems for at least a month. 5-6 weeks is better, because I want to make sure that when I'm doing the data entry, that I'm getting the same reports, I'm getting the same value sets. You have to validate that the migration, the data transfer, the architectural way of doing it is exactly the same. You need professional help. This is something you should go to an accounting firm like Gonzalez for getting help in making the migration. This doesn't happen in an afternoon where you plug it in, you walk away, and look at that. I've got movies. You know, it doesn't happen that fast. You have to go through the discipline of making the migration. But once you have made the migration, okay, I have real-time data. But the question becomes, how am I using the information on the financial data? And that's where this really becomes the key for which small and mid-sized businesses will prosper in the next 10 years. The ones that work with firms that can teach them how fiscal management works and will coach and mentor them on building the valuation of the company. Those are the ones that will thrive. The others will wind up on the sidelines. It's just no two ways about it. The way our company came about, because I've been doing transitions and turnarounds for 30-something years, I woke up one morning and turned to my best friend since the late 60s. We have three children and six grandchildren, so it's an okay thing. But I turned to her and I said, "Oh my God, what a stupid I am." And she looked at me and she says, "There's been a lot of things I've wanted to call you. Stupid has never been one of them. Why are you a stupid?" I said, "Well, for 3 decades now, I've been helping businesses of all sizes raise valuation, increase profits, retirement, succession planning. I've done capital formation. I've done M&A. She says, "And you're really good at it." I said, "Yes, but what did we do? We built a star-based business. And though the Brits can clone sheep, I wouldn't want to raise me again." And she was laughing because she knew what the challenge was, raising her own kids, right? So she looked at me and says, "You really are stupid. What are you going to do about that?" And so the inspiration for the company was the ability to provide the kind of tools that CFOs of world-class multinationals had available to them from the 10, 15, 20 analysts that worked in these Fortune 100 companies, to provide them information on how to guide multi-billion dollar corporations. And you might ask, "Well, how will I know how to do that?" Because I was actually hired to come in and train analysts in Fortune 200s on how to do the math and how to do the risk management.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the inspiration for the business. So one of the first things that we found out was that the tools were elegant. We let you build a strategy that says, when are we going to do this? What is the one-time cost? What are the monthly costs? What are the growth costs? Who are we hiring? What are they paid? How are they paid? How many months will it take to get to a revenue standpoint? Literally the kind of stuff that is truly done at multinationals. You can build it on this little software tool that's capturing the historical data from 3 years of history from cloud-based accounting systems, okay? Pretty cool stuff. We tried to provide it to business owners. Now, to show you the state of business owners, a very, very large international corporation that had a huge distribution channel, and you'd recognize the name, I won't mention them, but definitely somebody you'd know, took their top 40 distributors and asked me, "Would you consider training them on fiscal management in their company using your tools. We'll pay you for a year of tools, and we'll pay you for your advisory work. And I billed out at a pretty substantial rate. Went through the whole thing. Monthly, had an individual call with every member. Quarterly, had a group call with all the members. They had accountability groups, tracked and monitored their data, educated them on fiscal management through the tools. And the only thing they had to do at the 13th month was to pay a licensing fee for the use of the tool of $120 a month. You know what the adoption rate was? Zero.
Whoa.
They just didn't have time. That's not of interest. We're making money. Gee, thanks. You helped. Look, right? So, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, my fault. So that was when we determined that there was this huge shift coming in the accounting industry. And that was, as technology was getting farther along, what accountants did, tax, audit, compliance, which basically means I want to make sure you pay as little tax as you can. Right. Audit means somebody has to check and make sure that you're not lying about the data you put in, but it can't be me.
Right.
And the third is compliance. I got to make sure you don't go to jail.
Right.
Those things were getting so commoditized that accounting firms were not making as much money as they used to.
Right.
Right. And so they had to look for other ways of making business. Now, the big firms like McGladrey and BDO and KPMG, they've always had consulting advisory work. That's some much larger companies. So there was this emerging trend, and I saw this more actually in Australia and in the United Kingdom than I saw in the United States, your guys' team exception, for providing these value-added services. So my inspiration was to create the kind of tools that were used by multinational corporations for CFOs guiding hundreds of millions and billions of dollars a year of expenditures, growth, risk management, and so on, but doing it in a way that really helped prosper the company. And the biggest challenge we had in the early years was having to train accountants on the difference between accounting and fiscal management.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, and another thing, you know, because an accountant has a fiduciary responsibility, well, how do your formulas work? Why do we know they're right? Well, you know, no, it's a very valid question. So what we did was we went to the largest international accountancy system, which is called the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales. That's over in, you know, UK. 55,000 accounting firms globally are members of this. The big four, all the regionals, Moss Adams, everybody, okay? They're all members of this. And we had our product accredited by their teams, which basically mean it was them. And at that time, it was, it was essentially McGladrey and Baker Tilly that put this thing through the ringer for a year. We are the only fully accredited budgeted and forecasting tool.
Well, tell me, Peter, a small to medium-sized business, what can they expect from, you know, from Hugo and John Gonzalez as they begin working with them, educating them in terms of, you know, financial management and using Profit C? What is it that company can expect?
Well, the first thing they're going to find is they're going to be able to build both budgets that can actually track and monitor against real-time performance. Mm-hmm. So they'll know when it happens if there's something that needs attention. The second thing they're going to do is they're going to be able to build a cash flow forecast that shows on history and trend and new opportunities where the company is moving. And from that, you'll be able to build strategies and tactics to continue to solidify how to build the company. The tool is good enough that the Gonzalez team can actually look at your tax projections and know when to take business strategy steps to minimize the tax and shelter it over the next couple of years. If you're running, let's say you're a franchisor and there are 15 franchisees in the organization, you'll be able to spot in real time who's doing well, who's not, how they benchmark against one another, how to get automatically notified when something falls out of any variance that you want to identify, and take the steps to make a change. This is live stuff, but you have to work with an accounting firm that understands fiscal management and operation of a business. That's what our tool does.
And I think that's why it's such a good fit for Gonzalez and ProfitC, because Gonzalez has a bank of bookkeepers, essentially bookkeepers, who are going to be managing the online accountant programs like QuickBooks. And then together with ProfitC, they will be able to set that up so that every day when there is that variance, that they don't have to wait a month for it or a quarter until the end of the quarter. It's going to pop up right there with a red flag. Somebody can pick up that phone and call and say, what's going on?
The fact of the matter is, using ProfitC tools, the Gonzalez team will be able to honestly tell their business owners, I am monitoring your financial performance daily. And that's something they've never had.
Now, some of the resistance that I have experienced is companies that have used QuickBooks Desktop, and they have embedded that all across their company, and with their ERP system, with their inventory management, with their payroll, all of these pieces. Now, what do they do with that? Can QuickBooks Online handle all of that?
Well, here's kind of what's elegant about what's emerging in the technology. Let's say you wanted to stay in the QuickBooks family. Okay. You make the migration from QuickBooks Desktop to QuickBooks Online. But let's say there's a couple of pieces in that ERP system that just don't make the shift so well. Maybe it's how they're managing payroll, right? Or maybe it's how they're doing inventory management or just in time. The thing that is so elegant is that the online accounting packages have attracted the best of the best of the best of the third-party developers to come and create tools that work with those online systems. So it's a question of working with someone that will understand what other things are you doing within your ERP environment and looking for the right matches in terms of the third-party product sets.
So what I'm hearing is in planning for the advisory team at Gonzalez, where, you know, we have people who are experts in healthcare, in HR,
exactly,
experts in how to digitize current paper documents that you have, sales, marketing. We should also have access to some people who are expert in making this transition from desktop to online, so that we don't miss a beat. If we're embedded on desktop, then is it possible that we can embed the same kind of pieces, maybe even improving quality online?
Without a question. Just to show you the challenges that are faced, okay? We have clients in Europe. We have clients in the United Kingdom. We have clients in Canada. We have clients in the United States, in Australia. We actually, our product, we had to not only do global currency translation with real-time value shifts. The product actually speaks French, German, we're about to release Dutch, Spanish, and three forms of English.
Yeah.
They don't count, American as one of the English languages.
Right.
So. But, okay, so we did all this. Okay, now think about this. We're a small mid-sized business right now, okay? But I have offices in Austria. I have offices in the United Kingdom. I have offices in the United States. We just opened offices in Australia. How do you do accounting for that? Am I going to all of a sudden decide that I'm going to use something like NetSuite, which is an architecture designed for that type of stuff, but it's a terrible accounting package? You know what we did? We used cloud-based accounting packages, separate ones for each of the individual companies. And we consolidate and manage everything financially through ProfitC tools.
Oh my goodness.
So we literally have the tool will allow your Gonzalez's partners, your clients, whether they import, export, to China, whether they have offices in Chile, in Honduras. You can use our tool for managing the entire operation as if you had a multinational ERP system.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? now
that's why you need good help.
Now here I'm going to put myself in the role of a 25 million dollar company that is fully embedded with QuickBooks Desktop. And my question is, how confident that can I be that I'm going to get a return on my investment for this highly qualified consultant who's going to make the transition from desktop to online?
Well, first thing is, how much does an error cost when you don't spot it for 5 or 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Good.
Secondly, when you're trying to create what's going on tomorrow, how much do you spend? What kind of rate of return does it happen to occur? Right? Look, we included in our tool an actual corporate valuation statement, so that if you're wondering if this is working or not, just run the valuation every month.
There you go.
See if the value of the company is going up. There are, look, I'll never forget something told to me by one of the presidents at Texas Instrument. I was fortunate enough to help them in the 1980s. And I'm sitting in a room with him and his seven directs, and I'm 32 years old, and the next youngest guy in the room is 50. And I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing here? Right? So Eric Jones, who was the president, he was walking me out to the car where Charlie Boyd, one of his right-hand guys, is going to drive me to the airport. And he's saying, Peter, he says, you know, you're a young guy. You're really bright. I'm sure you don't really understand why I've asked you to come in here. But you're going to be a great contribution here, and we're so glad you made it out. Now we've reached the car door, and he turned to me and says, but I want to tell you one thing. If you ever tell me what we have to do to increase the valuation of the company, I'm going to fire you right on the spot. And he put me in the car, and I had to be back a week later. And I'm, oh my God. So I'm calling everybody. What do you mean? I'm a publicly traded company. Yeah. Show you how smart this guy was. I came back into his office. He's my first stop to come back into the campus. And this was in the 80s, and there were robots delivering mail and packages throughout a 9,000 person campus.
Mm-hmm.
That was Star Wars-y stuff, right? I come into his room and I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I going to say? So I said, you know, Eric, couldn't get out of my mind just what you talked about. I've got all kinds of thoughts on it, but could I get your frame of reference first? So I'm trying to bluff my way through. And he knows I didn't understand. He says, Peter, he says, you know, times have changed. Today, a lot of executives are incentivized by raising valuation quickly before they retire because they're only going to be in that role for 3 to 5 years. He says, I can tell you the fastest way to raise value. He says, you reduce fixed costs, and your largest fixed costs are your employees. So you shrink down the employees. You tell everyone, don't worry, we're going through this great trade, but you're part of, you know, and we're going to make the future better. And they're just doing that to pop the valuation. They come out of it with a few million dollars, and they killed the company.
Right.
He said, what we've learned is that if we make sure that all the people we trade with, our distribution channels, our research engineers, our manufacturing facilities, our employees, our shareholders, if with every partner, we always make sure that we're providing equal or greater value and not cheating everyone, valuation takes care of itself. Now, let me tell you why this was so important, because this is a lesson for small businesses. It's all on how effectively you trade, and it's how tracking your financials will tell you whether your trading is smart or you're burning money or not. You know who TI's competitors were in those days? Wang Corporation, out of business. Digital Equipment Corporation, out of business. IBM, out of business in that form. Compaq, out of business. Hewlett-Packard, out of business in that sector. 9 major competitors, they're the last ones standing. Huge business lesson for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm trying to share with your listeners is, fiscal management and understanding how it reflects itself in the lifeblood of your company is the key for making it thrive. You have to learn to trade effectively, and the trades are measured by the accounting.
So what is it that we can offer to companies? What is the call to them? because they're not going to be able to pick up the phone and call you and buy Prophet C.
No, of course, yeah. I really think the real key is in having someone come in and do a financial analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they get a call from Gonzalez and says, look, you know, we've worked with you for some years. We really owe you an apology. We haven't done a fiscal analytic report for you guys. We'd really like to do that. And even if you pay $1,500, $2,000 for it, you really need to do this. Frankly, for some of the companies, you probably should pay more than that. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is the Gonzalez team will sit down. They'll read through the reports and they're going to highlight things that they know aren't kosher. Things are off. And from that, that's how you build a relationship. That's how you say, these are the things that need help. These are the things we have to work on. Let me give you a classic question I used to ask, because I used to do a lot of platform speaking on these types of things. I had a cool one called Tripling Your Profits,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of fun. But if you asked a business owner what true break-even meant, what would they tell you? They'd probably say when your revenues are equal to your expenses. Okay?
Right.
That's not true. True break-even, no, it's not. You'll go out of business in 5 months.
Right.
True break-even is when your revenue is equal to your fixed expenses plus your variable expenses plus your balance sheet cash dispositions plus cash reserves for seasonality, cash reserves for aging receivables and uncollected money, additional money for growth because it takes money to make new money, and some risk capital. And when you know that, when you know what that number is, now you know what true break-even is. Here's what most people don't understand. All the expense side, the expenditure side there, certain things are variable. Cost of sales, cost of goods. Revenue goes up, cost of sales goes up. Payroll doesn't go up until you hire more people. When you know what your true break-even is, and you know what your true unchanging costs are, whatever that percentage is, let's say it's 60%. You know what that means? Every dollar that you make above true break-even puts 60%, 60 cents of net pre-tax margin to your bottom line. That's the kind of stuff that fiscal management is built on. And how do you do this? That's why you have to work with teams like Gonzalez that not only understand how this works, but use our tool. We really are the only tool globally that does this kind of stuff.
Right. Well, that's what we're doing with the advisory team that we're putting together. And obviously people like you are essential to having it. And, it's clear to me that we're going to be looking around to find some first class, transition consultants from desktop to online.
There's a good group in San Francisco called Carbon, K-A-R-B-O-N.
Okay.
You might want to give them a call.
Okay.
Like I said, most of the accounting software companies, they've already built tools for making transitions to their own cloud-based systems.
Good.
But it's more than just transferring to the
cloud. Right. So. Yep. Well, all right. Good, Peter. So, what any last thoughts that you'd like to leave with these small business owners in Southern California?
I think when you start moving towards fiscal management of your company, building efficiencies, increasing margin, increasing profitability, happy relationships with your bank, the bank smiles at you because you really have a cash flow forecast in place. You are the ones, the early leaders, you're the ones that will thrive. The people that do not move in this direction, they're the ones that will perish, and it isn't that we want anybody to fail, but fiscal management is the key towards building prosperity. And you in Southern California, you have your own unique set of challenges.
Right.
Blessings upon you.
Thank you.
And, I certainly hope that as you move ahead and you work with the Gonzalez teams and some of the other people that are involved in the cloud-based ecosystems, that you find things are getting pretty good.
It's good. Well, thank you, Peter, very much for giving us some insight into the trajectory that accountancy software is moving. Also, the kind of things that companies need to be thinking about how they're projecting their cash flow, projecting their profit as they look forward in forecasting and prepare for these necessities that banks are requiring in terms of before they consider loans.
Fundamentally, it's how do you grow in a smart way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's what we do at the Pilgrim on the 405 is to help businesses in Southern California thrive. So we wish you the best. Look forward to talking with you again next week. We'll be having four different people each time in the month. One will be talking to people like Peter Vicens, a thought leader from national, international renown, to speak with us about how we might move forward. We'll be talking to some of the advisory team at Gonzales. We'll be giving specific insight into how to move forward in particular areas. We'll also be talking to people who are actually using the Gonzales advisory program to help them get really clear about how this is helping them to achieve their goals. And finally, we'll be talking to businesses who are actually thriving in Southern California. So we look forward to seeing you again. Until then, live long and prosper.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.